Welcome once again to the Lifestyle Determinants Workshop. We have a full afternoon, and you heard the request of our director that we finish by 6, and so we will push forward in that direction. Our first presenter doesn't need much introduction. You've heard him several times, once in this workshop and also as a plenary. Dr. Gary Fraser is the director of the Adventist Health Study at Loma Linda University, and he is a cardiologist, and we just really appreciate his willingness to come and share. He's going to do a little different today, and he's going to ask the question, what Adventists can learn from health studies. So Gary, welcome, and thank you very much.
Well, thank you, Fred. I actually just realized I went back to my hotel in the lunchtime and I left my name badge there, so I was kind of hoping they wouldn't let me into the room. It would have solved a lot of problems for me and maybe for you as well, but fortunately they didn't notice. I didn't interpret this topic as being one in which I should just kind of rehash the results of the study. I think most of you perhaps have heard that and heard enough of it. And so I've tried to think in a slightly different vein, and I think only got about 15 minutes left or so. I see we're starting a little late, and probably I don't need very much time, but I'm hoping that it, when I'm done, that there might be time for you to give me a little feedback and perhaps tell us things that we could have done and should have done, or perhaps should still do. But I've only got one slide, if I can actually figure out how to advance it. Maybe that does it? Yes. And here are some of the things that I would just like to quickly run through, some ideas that I had, and you might have some other ideas about things that you have learned. And one of the things that I'd like to comment about, in a way, is some things that Adventists have not learned. And it's striking to us that probably at least half of Adventists in the United States, for instance, are substantial meat eaters, 3, 4, 5, up to 10 times a week or so meat. I don't know that there's any statistics from Europe and many other parts of the world, but I understand, anecdotally at least, that about perhaps only 20% of people in this country are vegetarians, even though I recognize that's only a small part, perhaps, of the total program of health that we have. And so one question is, how can we motivate the 50% plus Adventists in the United States, and maybe 75% plus in many other parts of the world, to become more involved with the program that we have as a church on personal health? Now, in some places, it may just simply be a matter of education. But I think in many other places, and perhaps even in Europe, it's a matter of trust. And I understand that up until fairly recently, the fact that the church's health message was largely interpreted, at least, as coming from the writings of Ellen White was potentially a barrier. And I think that there are issues within the church as to what is the meaning of a health reformer or the health message. And in some ways, there's, in the minds of many, I think, the idea that there's a first-class and a second-class Adventist that's defined by their health habits. And I think that that really has no basis in fact. And I think in that regard, it's important that we clarify and perhaps spend more time, which I'm not going to do this afternoon in any great detail, to clarify the connection between religion and good health habits. It's first and foremost, I think, about human potential, and we've been talking a lot about that this afternoon, and not really about spiritual fitness. Not that there's no connection. In fact, I often like to think of our personal health habits as a spiritual discipline. It's no litmus test for spirituality. For instance, just like prayer or Bible study might be considered a spiritual discipline, because someone spends 6 hours a day on their knees, it doesn't necessarily mean that they're a more spiritual person, and so forth. Romans 14 is actually a chapter of the Bible that I've enjoyed very much in this regard, and I don't really have much time to go into that anymore. So that's one comment. How can we motivate those within our ranks who are not participating to do so? I think it's a real challenge. And I think that this meeting actually has gone some way to be very helpful in that regard. The second little comment here is that in the United States, and I would imagine it's not so different in other parts of the developed world, more than half of the people in the Adventist Health Study are overweight. Even slightly more than half if the lacto-over-vegetarians are overweight. And as I said in another session yesterday, we've got this tremendous variance that the vegans have a BMI on average of 23, whereas the non-vegetarians have a BMI on average of 28.6. And what has happened there is that the vegans have a similar BMI to vegans in other parts of the world by and large, but what is happening is that the non-vegetarians in the Western world are getting heavier and heavier and heavier, and so you've got this expanding difference between the various dietary patterns. So it's very obvious that the vegetarian diet is not always healthful. At least it can be have some problems. Huge serving sizes, high in fat and sugar, snacking between meals, mainly using processed foods and little or no physical activity, all have their part to play. Interestingly, our data suggests that the lacto-over-vegetarians actually exercise slightly less than the non-vegetarians. Maybe they're somewhat literally resting on their laurels rather than getting out and doing a little more activity, being satisfied that they're doing all the right things by eating right. Number three here, I wonder whether the findings that we have made in California primarily to this time, a little bit across the country, may have some implications for economically developing countries. I believe that it's very possible, given the huge burden of chronic diseases that's already present in many of these countries and is projected to increase even to a much greater extent in those countries than the United States, means that given that we're a church that many times has a significant presence in those same countries, probably gives us a tremendous opportunity, because the very things many times that they need are the things that I think that we're in a position to deliver. Particularly people that are in economic transition, where they're starting to have a little economic flexibility but are not well educated in health science. We can help there. We can teach skills. We can give social support and these kind of things. We see the epidemic of diseases of excess very well underway in these countries, and yet I think we have an opportunity to help, perhaps make political links with health ministries in some of these countries and even be politically active. Can you adapt the Adventist health message to your culture? I think is an interesting question. Now, the fourth one here was actually suggested by my wife. Maybe Ellen White really did have something important to say. And I think that there are some of us who over the years have not really had a great deal of question about that, but there's obviously many, many others that have. So let me be clear. I don't think the Adventist Health Study really offers any proof that Ellen White was inspired. That's not my point. I think that comes from other sources. Perhaps it even means depends on what you mean by inspired. In her time, of course, there were many health reformers. There was Dr. Graham of Graham Cracker fame, and Dr. Trowell, and Dr. John Harvey Kellogg, of course, and a number of others. And none of her ideas was really individually unique, but the package she put together really was. And it's possible that she even had a few missteps along the way, but the missteps, if they were present, were not her broad themes. And we today have no Grahamites or Trellites, but we have many, many Adventists, and Ellen White's counsels have by and large stood the test of time and also the test of science. One of the other interesting thing to me has been that over the last 3 or 4 years, we've had major positive publicity. When previously do you recall the name of Adventist being not only in the National Geographic, but also in ABC, CNN, CBS, French TV, Canadian TV, a little bit on BBC, and no doubt some others, also on Oprah Winfrey, I didn't see that. But and of course then there's the Blue Zone book by Dan Buettner. And to me it's been kind of interesting to observe the church's response to that, or in some ways lack of response. I think that really we've had some learning to do is to, how do we handle that? How do we make the best use of positive publicity around the world, such as that we've not really been used to having? And again, I think maybe that this conference is a step in that direction, and it's been, I think, a great experience these last few days, for me at least, to see what's happening and to recognize that we, I think, have the opportunity as the people to really make a mark to become of world standard. And I think that's really possible if we set our sights high enough. So we need to learn to take advantage, I think, of the mass media in these days when that's all around us, so that we can give people high quality information. The next thing I had on my list was that the Adventist Health Study may be just one factor, and one factor amongst many, I'm sure, that can improve our confidence to aspire to leadership on the world stage. Not only the results of these studies, but also the idea that we can successfully compete. It's been a major endeavor. Our funding to this point has been about $20 million. We had to fight hard for that. We are right now and got some funding challenges. NIH, of course, has suffered the reverses of the finances of the country as a whole, the world as a whole, but things are looking better, and I'm sure that we will achieve what we need. But it's been an interesting experience. The one thing I've learned along the way is that the whole idea of partnering with influential people. We've always had a committee of some of the best in the country to work with. Walter Willett from Harvard. I've collaborated with Timothy Keyes and his crew from the University of Oxford, people from the University of Hawaii who have had one of the largest studies in the world of this sort. I've collaborated a little bit with Stanford, and we've had co-investigators who have worked with us from the University of Southern California. And all these people, they're not Adventists, but they're excited to work with us. They see the potential, and I think we've seen the same thing this week, where we have people from PAHO and people from WHO who, they're not troubled to be working with us. And I think to some extent that we've grown up feeling a little separate, perhaps even wanting to be a little separate initially, but we've become large in number, and I think that our inferiority complex, maybe it's time to get rid of it. I think we can really make a mark. At least in the United States, and I'm sure it's true around the world, I'm always astonished. We're a small group of people, less than 1 million people that actively attend church and come and sit in the pews in the United States every Sabbath, and yet the amount of talent that we have, I think, is staggering. I think we're a group that's been very blessed, and I think that we need to learn to use that and not have that inferiority complex. And the final thing that I had on my list is whether or not some of the Adventist health studies and some of the things we've done in some form or another might be replicated in other societies. I've had people from many other countries, Adventists, who have come and wanted to do some kind of study of Adventist health, whether it be in Chile or Argentina or Europe or other places. And I think that's an interesting idea. As I said yesterday at another session, what we desperately need is well-trained, enthusiastic young Adventist epidemiologists. Interestingly, we have very, very few. We're a group of rapidly aging professors at Loma Linda involved with the Adventist Health Study, and we have very few young people coming on. Most of our graduates from the epidemiology doctorate, not all of them, have turned out to be non-Adventists. And so if there are some of you here today, health professionals that have perhaps a quantitative orientation and don't mind a few statistics and things like that, give some consideration to coming and working with us for a few months, seeing if this is something that you would like to get further training in. We really need your help. Because I think it's possible also that we could hopefully have some kind of a fellowship program where people from other parts of the world could come and work on our data. We have a huge amount of fascinating data and really not enough people to work on it, to explore it in the way that would be ideal. Well, I think I'm going to stop there, and I don't know, Fred, whether we have time for any other comments or observations that other people might have for a minute or two, 5 more minutes. Okay. Well, maybe none of you have anything further to add, but if you do, raise your hand. Yeah, it's an interesting tension, isn't it? Because you need to be very careful to step away from the idea that the way a person acts in terms of the way that they eat and exercise is in some way an indicator of their spirituality. And I'm sure that's not what you meant. And yet, at the same time, the two are probably not divorced. But I think it becomes a very, very negative thing to start placing judgments on people because of whether or not they eat eggs or dairy or meat. I think that's not what you meant. Maybe you'd like to comment further, but... I agree. That's a much more healthy transition. And, you know, Romans 14 is kind of interesting because I think it's verse 2 where it says that he that is weak, let him eat vegetables, which has always been a little hard for the vegetarians amongst us to swallow. And yet, if you read the remainder of that chapter, I think the point that Paul is making is that whatever we eat or drink or the way that we act is not an indicator of holiness. And that chapter, he says, time and time again, is against judging our brother. And so to me, that's an illuminating chapter. It makes the point, I think, very directly, and it just happens that the illustration he uses is pertinent, that we cannot use these things as a litmus test to judge our brother. Physical. I'm sure that there are scales that one can measure mental health. Now, you may be thinking about also spiritual health. There are scales of religiosity. I should say that out of our new study, where we have 96,000 people, 11,000 of those people have filled out a separate questionnaire that has got 20 pages of very carefully selected items on religious attitudes and religious practice, using many of the accepted scales that are published in the literature on these topics. So we will be able to make links between dietary habits and physical activity and other health habits and spirituality. It's going to be tough to make causal links between those two things, but it will nevertheless be interesting to make those links, and we haven't tried to do that yet. But. Yes. Well, I don't know maybe someone else can comment on that. I'm not aware that there have been other studies of Adventists in Europe. I think there would be data on that from Norway. And I don't believe so. There have been studies in the past also from the Netherlands and Denmark and Poland, but I don't believe they went into lifestyle and dietary habits. It was just church membership and health experience. Mm.
Yes.
Well, you know, I don't know how it is in the United States. There were some statistics a while back, but it was something along the lines that I think there was only about 15 or 20% of people had even heard of Seventh-day Adventists. This was probably 10, 15 years ago. And I'm sure that that's also true, I think, in New Zealand, where they had a similar survey. So at least these kind of things help to overcome that barrier and to do it in a positive light. And the question is, how can we use that, I think, to move on from that point.
Jesus. Amen.